taking their place in a long true line of everyday Americans,
helping to secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity. This is the Constitution Study on the America Out Loud Network with your host, Paul Engel.
Pay the bills, stay out of jail, love the neighbors and have a few good friends. Every day you are everyday Americans.
Hello there, everyday Americans, and welcome to the Constitution Study. This is where we read and study the Constitution. We teach rising generation to be free. I am glad you could join me today. You know, today I'm asking a question: is the cure worse than the disease? Now, I have this vivid memory as a small child of, I was at my aunt and uncle's house. I was playing with my cousins, and I got hurt. I don't remember what happened. I had a cut, and, and in those days, they had this thing, this stuff called methylate. And I distinctly remember my aunt putting some of that on my cut, and oh, boy, did it sting. And I remember asking myself, man, which is worse, the cut or the methylate making it supposedly feel better by making it hurt? Okay, I'm sure most of us have some sort of memory like that as a child, right? You got hurt or something, or you'd get a cold and your mom would have something to help deal with the cold, and you wondered whether or not it was worth it because it was awful. Well, that holds through just as much today, and it holds through not simply with medical conditions, but with society. You know, we hear people cry all the time, we must do something. And that always scares me. Because we must do something doesn't mean we have to do the right thing. It doesn't mean we have to do the legal thing. It doesn't even mean we have to do the effective thing. It just means we have to do something. Someone's going to do something and pat themselves on the back for it, and then we'll have to deal with the consequences later. I remember early in my career, I was working for a company, and long story short, there was an improvement made to a process that would save a lot of time and effort and money in the assembling of the products. And I'm not going to name who and where because it's not, but they somebody submitted this process, and somebody probably got a very large bonus because it seemed really, really cool until they put it into action. And it actually caused the product to fail explosively. See, this person did something, but it actually made things worse. So what happens when those we entrust to exercise our powers in our name simply do something without considering the consequences? Or do something and never go back and say, you know what? We did something, we looked at the consequences, it was the wrong thing, let us go back and fix it. What happens when we never let that happen? Now, I tend to deal with this a lot in court cases, where you'll see a court case and everyone goes, yay, we got the opinion we wanted, never looking at the details, really realizing either it didn't do what we thought it would do, or even worse, it opened us up for something even worse. So today, I want to take a look at some of these examples where the cure may even be worse than the disease. And speaking about court cases, I'm going to start with a case out of Illinois. I usually cover cases involving the Constitution of the United States. Today, however, I'm looking at a case out of the state of Illinois involving that state's Constitution and the question of county gun and ammo taxes. Now, while the appellant's complaint argues that these taxes violate both Article 1, Section 22 of the Illinois Constitution and the Second Amendment to the U.S. Constitution, the Illinois Supreme Court instead focused on the taxing power of the county. While Cook County gun owners may be happy with the outcome, as a constitutional scholar, I find the majority opinion woefully lacking. The case of Gun Save Life, Inc. versus Zahar Ali, director of the Department of Revenue of Cook County, brings up an interesting question. Is a tax on a constitutionally protected right an infringement of that right? Now, the case stems from two Cook County ordinances, one that imposes a $25 tax on the retail purchase of a firearm within the county, the other a tax on ammunition of 5 cents per centerfire cartridge and 1 cent per rimfire.
Gun Save Life Inc. claims that these taxes violate both the Second Amendment to the Constitution of the United States and Article 1, Section 22 of the Illinois Constitution, which reads, "Subject only to the police power, the right of the individual citizen to keep and bear arms shall not be infringed." While the court looked at several legal issues regarding the case, I'm focusing on the constitutional questions involved. From the opinion, "We begin our analysis with the Illinois constitutional claims and need not consider the federal constitutional claim, as we find dispositive that the taxes violate the uniformity clause." See, the court decided not to even consider the violation of the rights to keep and bear arms under the constitutions of either Illinois or the United States. Rather, the court focused on the issue of uniformity. See, Article 9, Section 2 of the Illinois Constitution states, "In any law classifying the subjects or objects of non-property taxes or fees, the classes shall be reasonable and the subjects and objects within each class shall be taxed uniformly. Exceptions, deductions, credits, refunds, and other allowances shall be reasonable." The court then notes that for a non-property tax to survive its scrutiny, it must be based on a real or substantial difference between the people taxed and not taxed, and bear some reasonable relationship to the legislation or public policy. It is the second of these requirements where the court found problems with these ordinances. Here, the entity responsible for justifying the tax, the county, maintains that the tax classification is justified since a reasonable relationship exists between the special tax and the object of the ordinance. The preferred justification for the taxes is to fund the staggering economic and social costs of gun violence in Cook County. The court asserts that firearms and ammunition are instruments of death and that their harmful effects cost the county immeasurably in terms of health, safety, and welfare. The county claims that the taxes are reasonable because of the amount of money it pays to treat gunshot wounds. The county claims it spends between $30 and $40 million per year, and since 25% of those patients do not have health insurance, well, the county must pick up the cost of their treatment. The county also claims that firearms and ammunition are instruments of death and are therefore harmful to public health, safety, and welfare, which means these taxes are a source of revenue for gun safety and violence prevention programs, along with the funding of the criminal justice agencies that combat gun violence. The court, however, found something different. "We agree that the ordinances impose a burden on the exercise of a fundamental right protected by the Second Amendment. At its core, the Second Amendment protects the right of law-abiding citizens to keep and bear arms for self-defense in the home," according to District of Columbia versus Heller. While the taxes do not directly burden a law-abiding citizen's right to use a firearm for self-defense, they do directly burden a law-abiding citizen's right to acquire a firearm and the necessary ammunition for self-defense. Gun Save Life, Inc. relied on the Boynton v. Cusper case to claim that an ordinance may not single out the exercise of a fundamental right for special taxation to raise revenue for the general welfare. They claim that the revenue raised by the taxes do not specifically fund gun violence prevention measures, rather the proceeds go into the county's general fund. In this language, the court hides a lie in the middle of the truth. Yes, taxing something imposes a burden on it. Therefore, taxing a right protected by the Constitution imposes a burden on the exercise of that right. However, the court did not accurately describe either the Second Amendment or the Supreme Court's Heller opinion on which they were relying. The Second Amendment protects an individual right to possess a firearm unconnected with service in the militia and to use that firearm for traditionally lawful purposes such as self-defense in the home. So in the Heller decision, the Supreme Court attempted to limit the plain language of the Constitution when it recognized that the Second Amendment protects an individual right to possess firearms for traditionally lawful purposes, of which self-defense within the home is one. However, the Second Amendment states, "A well-regulated militia being necessary to the security of a free state, the right of the people to keep and bear arms shall not be infringed." The Constitution does not limit the lawful purposes of firearms to self-defense in the home. The right to bear arms means the right to carry, therefore extending the right to use outside of the home as well. Neither does the Second Amendment limit the use of arms to self-defense. Noel Webster defined arms in his 1828 dictionary as weapons of offense or armor for defense and protection of the body. The Second Amendment protects the right to keep and bear arms, not just firearms. That means your right to carry knives, swords, chemical sprays, or basically any arm. Now, the court has already admitted it was not going to consider the Second Amendment issue because it found a problem with the taxing issue. Applying that standard to the firearm and ammunition taxes, we recognize that the uniformity clause was not designed as a straitjacket for the county and acknowledge the cost that gun violence imposes on society. Nevertheless, the relationship between the tax classification and the use of the tax proceeds is not sufficiently tied to the stated objective of ameliorating those costs. Under the plain language of the ordinance, the revenue generated from the firearms tax is not directed to any fund or program specifically related to curbing the cost of gun violence. Additionally, nothing in the ordinance indicates that the proceeds generated from the ammunition tax must be specifically directed to initiatives aimed at reducing gun violence. Thus, we hold the tax ordinances are unconstitutional under the Uniformity Clause. According to the court, the problem with these ordinances is not that they infringe on a right protected by the constitutions of both the state and the United States, but that the tax singles out a group of people without being used for the stated purpose of the tax. It appears to be the court using the tax question to skirt the central issue of infringing on the rights of the citizens of Cook County, Illinois. While the decision of the Illinois Supreme Court was unanimous, Justice Burke included a special concurrence. I agree with the majority that Cook County's special tax on firearms and ammunition violates the uniformity clause of the Illinois Constitution. Therefore, the appellate court's judgment must be reversed and summary judgment entered on behalf of the plaintiffs. I write separately because I believe there's an even greater problem with the county's tax that the majority should not ignore. While I agree that there was a much graver problem with the county's tax ordinance that the court should have addressed, it is not the one that Justice Burke wrote about. As numerous Illinois cases explain, under our state constitution, the power to regulate and the power to tax are separate and distinct government purposes. While the government may regulate the right to keep and bear arms within other constitutional limits under its police power, by the plain terms of Article 1, Section 22, it has no authority to single out the exercise of that right for taxation. Justice Burke points out that the Illinois Constitution does not allow the government to single out the right to keep and bear arms for taxation, only to regulate it under their police powers. Now, my problem with the justice's analysis of the right to keep and bear arms falls squarely on the Supremacy Clause, Article 6, Clause 2 of the United States Constitution, which reads, "The Constitution and the laws of the United States which shall be made in pursuance thereof, and all treaties made or which shall be made under the authority of the United States, shall be the supreme law of the land, and the judges in every state shall be bound thereby, anything in the Constitution or laws of any state to the contrary, notwithstanding." The Constitution clearly states not only does it supersede the Constitution of the state of Illinois, but that the justices of the Illinois Supreme Court are bound to it. While the Illinois Constitution may subject the right of the individual to keep and bear arms to the police power, the Constitution of the United States does not. Therefore, the government may not regulate the right to keep and bear arms, period. Anything else is both a violation of the justice's oath of office and a crime under Title 18 of the United States Code, Section 242. Now, in my opinion, Justice Burke also points out a serious problem with the way the court went about finding these taxes unconstitutional. The majority's analysis is problematic because it leaves space for a municipality to enact a future tax, single out guns and ammunition sales, that is more narrowly tailored to the purposes of ameliorating gun violence. Specifically, the majority states that the tax ordinance fails to pass constitutional muster only because the relationship between the tax classification and the use of the tax proceeds is not sufficiently tied to the stated objective of ameliorating the cost that gun violence imposes on society. The majority then admonishes that revenue generated from the taxes is not directed to any initiative or program directed at curbing gun violence or reducing its costs. The only problem with the majority's approach and the guidance it offers to the county is that such counsel, if followed, would still violate the provision of the Illinois Constitution noted above that plainly states that the right of the individual to keep and bear arms is subject only to the police power, not the power to tax. See Illinois Constitution from 1970, Article 1, Section 22. Thus, the majority is leading the county down a road of futility. Rather than a road to futility, I believe the majority of the court has mapped out a plan for the counties in Illinois to violate the rights of their citizens in a way the court would uphold. All Cook County or any government within the state of Illinois has to do to make these taxes acceptable to this court is earmark the revenue collected to something related to gun violence, such as violence prevention programs, or to offset the cost of the county's healthcare system. This is why I say constitutional scholars must trust, but verify. Simply reading the headlines around this case would lead one to believe that the Supreme Court of Illinois had stood up to defend the rights of the citizens of their state. Instead, the court found a picky little problem to focus on while ignoring the larger issue of constitutionally protected rights and placing signposts for the state and the county on how to infringe on those rights. By sidestepping the plaintiff's main argument that these taxes violate both Article 1, Section 22 of the Illinois Constitution and the Second Amendment of the Constitution of the United States, this court has not only denied the members of Gun Save Life, Inc. their right to petition the government for redress of grievance, but the right to due process as well. While some may claim the decision upheld the right of Illinois citizens to keep and bear arms, it did nothing of the sort. I would urge those citizens to consider that when these justices are next up for election.
You see what I mean about the cure being worse than the disease? The tax, okay, temporarily the tax has been suspended. But all Cook County has to do is rewrite those ordinances and say this money will be used for a violence prevention program or will be earmarked to offset the medical costs of gun violence. And voila, the taxes are back in place. See, this is a situation where a court decided it had to do something, just not to answer the grievance that it was petitioned to look at. And that responsibility falls squarely on the citizens of Illinois. See, in Illinois, these judges are elected. At least I believe they're elected. So they work for you. You hired them. And now whether you believe that, you know, the tax is right or not, the question is, does it violate the constitutions of Illinois and the United States? And that was never answered. And when we read articles and say, look, hey, you know, gun taxes is found unconstitutional, we need to look closer. Because otherwise, the solution, well, turns out not to be a solution at all. It actually opens up to even further infringements because now, well, there's more ways to get those taxes put in place to make it harder for people to exercise their constitutionally protected right to use arms to protect themselves, their neighbors, their state. That's what the Second Amendment to the United States says. Now, while we're talking about taxes, a San Diego Association of Governments met on October 29th. I have no idea what San Diego Association of Governments are, but here's their plan. They want to implement a 4 cent per mile tax on every driver in San Diego County. They want to do this by 2030. Now, why would they do this? Well, they say they want to supplement and even replace gas taxes whose revenues have decreased because, well, they're using less gasoline. Now, understand, California has been way out in front about reducing the amount of gasoline consumed within the state. Everything from pushing CAFE standards, minimum fuel mileage standards, to pushing for electric vehicles, mass transit. They've done everything they can to make it less and less beneficial to use gasoline. I believe Governor Newsom also proposed eliminating small gas engines for, you know, off-road stuff like lawnmowers, trimmers, chainsaws, even small off-road vehicles. So they've done everything they do to stop selling gasoline. But now they have a problem. They're not collecting the gasoline taxes. It's the same kind of twisted situation where they, governments from states and locals all the way up to the feds implemented taxes on cigarettes to discourage the sale of cigarettes, only to find out, well, when they discourage the sale of cigarettes, they receive less than taxes. Now, it's interesting because I've had this discussion with my state senator and my state representative about what happens to the income from gasoline taxes when we discourage the use of gasoline. And it is kind of a thorny problem. There are a lot of things that that we need to consider. So San Diego County wants to look at a mileage tax. Now, I was reading this article in the Epoch Times, and you know, sometimes it's all I can do to keep a straight face when I look at some of these things. A county supervisor, Jim Desmond, said, "This proposal should never see the light of day. San Diegans already pay some of the highest prices to drive in this country. From the current gas taxes to a vehicle registration tax, San Diegans feel the effect in their wallets every day. Adding another tax to fund public transportation is a slap in the face. I will not support any new taxes or fees upon San Diegans until the promised projects are complete." Ooh, what are these promised projects? You see that Sandag group? They have a long-term regional plan, a 30-year plan. They want to raise $160 billion with a B, billion dollars. So they can have no-cost public transit and a 200-mile rail network, a regional rail network. Now, I love when they say no-cost public transit, but they have to raise taxes to pay for the no-cost public transit. Irony is a wonderful thing sometimes. So there's all this, oh, we're already taxed too much, and oh my God, what are we going to do? And of course, on the other side, well, you know, it's a climate crisis. We're out of time. I always love it when you have a climate crisis and the people that are decrying a climate crisis don't live like there's a climate crisis, because there isn't one. But they say, oh, you know, transportation sources nearly half of our emissions in the county as a result on over-reliance on private vehicles. We need a world-class transportation system, and this plan must be long-lasting investment in our communities, equities, jobs of the future. Oh, see, we've got a climate crisis that we know is not a crisis because you don't treat it as a crisis, but we also know it's not a crisis because in the last, 100 years, the temperature's gone up 1.1 degrees Celsius. And, oh, by the way, lifespans have gotten longer. Food production has gone up. Everything they told us is going to be bad hasn't happened. And everything that they said would stop happening that's good has happened. So New York City's not underwater. They're still growing corn in the heartland. But that's not my point. See, in all these discussions, in all the debate that I've read so far about this, you know what I haven't heard? I haven't read, haven't seen anything about. How are they going to find out how many miles you drove? Oh, I'm sure. Here's what you do. I can just imagine this, right? The next time you go to your renew the registration on your vehicle, on that form, it's going to say, okay, what is your current mileage odometer? Oh, we knew what it was last time because we're collecting all sorts of information on you just so we have it, you know, and we're going to charge you 4 cents for every mile in between. Well, wait a second. I didn't drive all those miles in California. I didn't drive them all in San Diego. I drive to, Las Vegas once a month. Well, how do we know how much you did? The only way they know is to track every mile you drive. What are they going to do? Put a GPS tracker in your car, in the car of every San Diegan, so that they can charge them this tax? And let's say I drive to San Diego, right? Because I'm not flying right now because, let's face it, airlines are nuts and the government's not much better, is even worse. So let's say I drive to San Diego. You're not collecting mileage from me because I don't live in San Diego. I don't even live in California. See, the problem we have is government says we need to put a gas tax so that we can pay for maintaining roads. And then, of course, they become dependent on that. So when they say we need to limit the amount of gas, we need to stop being dependent on gas vehicles, they pass legislation to decrease the amount of gasoline sold, only to realize, oops, we're losing that tax revenue. Now we got to find taxes somewhere else. It's this constant, let's not look at the consequences of our previous decision. Let's simply go forward. So we got to do something. We got to come up with a way to cover this gas tax. Why? Oh, so we can pay for something to help reduce even more the gas tax, so that we can give people free public transportation that everybody who drives is paying for. See, it's not good enough to do something. We have to figure out how to do the right thing, the most effective thing. We need to adopt this, the scientific method. You know, the idea that you have an hypothesis, you test it, you then look at the results and you modify the hypothesis. The hypothesis was, well, the best way to pay for all of these infrastructure problems, to pay for roads and bridges and highways and stuff, is to charge a gasoline tax. Okay, that's been working, that's been working. Now we've got these other things. We're going to reduce the amount of gasoline. What is the best solution? And by best, I don't just mean, hey, we can get money. I mean, let's face it, when it comes to wanting money, governments are some of the greediest, people in government are some of the greediest in the town. No, let's find out what is the best action. And then let's continue testing until we find all of the possibilities. We find something that's even better than what we had before. And a perfect example of this, getting out of San Diego. See, remember President Biden has already been talking about tax hikes. Tax the rich, tax the rich. They want an illegal wealth tax. They want to do all this stuff to tax the rich. Well, guess what's happened? UBS Global Wealth Management, they found that a significant portion of their U.S. investors with at least $1 million in assets are taking actions to avoid paying those taxes. Yeah. In other words, they're saying, the people say, hey, President Biden's talking about putting in taxes. Let's protect our assets from those potential tax increases. So they're moving the money overseas. They're putting them in instruments that are not taxed. And in fact, according to the UBS survey, 40% said that because of the potential tax changes, they're actually shifting their assets to something that isn't generating profits. Now, just think about that for a minute. Let's say you have you have an investment, right? We all have if you have a retirement account of any form or function, a pension, a 401k, anything, you are investing. And you want those investments to generate profits because that's how your nest egg gets bigger so that you can retire. But now the people with money are saying, we want to move away from that. Where's the increase in economic activity coming from when everybody's trying to hide their money, just not hide, to protect their money from the greedy government in Washington, D.C.? See, this is the part that people never seem to grasp. If you look at the actual tax revenues, at least seen something like 1972, when taxes increase, the amount of revenue from those taxes coming into the government goes down. And when the tax rates decrease, the amount of revenue goes up. Now, I know it seems counterintuitive unless you think about it for a second. See, if you have money, how many of you do something specifically so that you get a tax break? How many of you bought your home, you have a mortgage, and you like that mortgage because you like the deduction you get for the interest you pay on that mortgage? How many of you do something to protect yourself from paying extra taxes? We all do it. It's practically the national pastime. So you have we have to do something. We want to spend $1 billion we don't have. Let's villainize the rich. Let's tax them. And then surprise, surprise, what do the rich do? They find legal ways to protect their money from those tax increases, meaning guess who gets to pay the extra taxes? That's right. You and me, Joe and Jane Citizen, who don't have the wherewithal to use all the little Nixon tools that Congress threw in so that their rich buddies can shelter their taxes from the government. Another one of those situations where the cure is worse than the disease. Now, I have to take a break, but before I do, I want to have you check out HealthyCell.com. See, even if your vitamins aren't hard to swallow, it is time to upgrade to HealthyCell's pill-free supplements. See, our cells determine how we feel, how we perform, how our bodies deal with the world around us. So that's why I take HealthyCell vitamins. Like many of you, maybe you have a time where you have a hard time sleeping. I'm about to hit the road, and one thing I know is when I'm on the road, I have a hard time falling asleep, so I'm going to use REM sleep to help me get to sleep. I take this gel, and I get drowsy, and I'm ready to sleep, and I sleep better, I sleep deeper, and I wake up ready to go. Now, as an America Out Loud listener, you get 20% off your first order. Just go to HealthyCell.com and use Out Loud at checkout. That's right, 20% off. Just go to HealthyCell.com, try any of their formulas, and use Out Loud at checkout.
Let's get real. Let's get loud. On America Out Loud Talk Radio, you know, I have to put a good word in for HealthyCell. They have three lines of products that I've been using now for months. One is Immune Super Boost, which is a daily supplement designed to supercharge your immunity. And boy, do we need this now with COVID-19 and the revelation that the COVID-19 spike protein could be in our body for a year and a half after the illness or after vaccination. The next product is Focus and Memory. And again, this brain fog that happens in the long COVID syndrome and even occurs in the post-vaccination syndrome appears to be really calling for a lot of the essential ingredients in the Focus product for Healthy Cell. And then lastly, my favorite product is the sleep product. The REM Sleep Healthy Cell product has a wonderful blend of combinations of key elements to restore normal sleep architecture. It's very important. It's different than getting put to sleep or forced to sleep. Getting a healthy sleep and having normal sleep architecture is quality sleep. And when we have good quality sleep, we have lower stress hormones during the day. We feel better. And I'm telling you, I'm not going to bed tonight until I've taken my Healthy Cell REM Sleep product. So go to HealthyCell.com. And when you order, hit the promo box and type in Out Loud. That will give you a 20% discount off the products. Try them. Try a box. Try all three. And do your own self-assessment. I know I've done it. So let's get real. Let's get loud on America Out Loud Talk Radio.
AmericaOutloud.com is the alternative from the agenda-driven globalist. Here, we take on the challenges of our generation so that we can preserve future generations. On-demand podcast or real-time talk radio with our streaming apps on Apple, Android, or Alexa. America Out Loud Talk Radio. Liberty and justice for all.
Welcome back, everyday Americans. You've rejoined the Constitution Study. Today, we're asking, is the cure worse than the disease? So, for example, we have, we should have by now the regulations published by OSHA. I say should because, well, I haven't been able to find the actual regulations. I know they've been sent to Management and Budget for review. They're supposed to release them. I haven't seen them yet. Who knows? But here we have, and I just love some of this language. So what OSHA is creating is called an emergency temporary standard. Now, why do I find that so incongruous? Because we're not dealing with a medical emergency. See, Biden is all bent out of shape by getting people vaccinated, but people aren't dying by droves from COVID. While any death is a tragedy to the family involved, we just haven't seen the types of death that would warrant, that would call this an emergency. What we have is a political emergency. We have government trying to force its will, and once again, we have President Biden with an illegal order that has yet to be published, but his minions in the executive branch have come up with an illegal regulation. It is not the supreme law of the land. Why? Because it was not made pursuant to the Constitution. I'm actually going to do a whole, I'm doing an article on that, so I'll probably talk about that more a little later. But all of this quote-unquote emergency is all fictitious. It's all political. It's a political emergency, not a medical one. But look at what's happening. How many companies, even before the order came out, have already started mandating their employees take the jab because, well, President Biden had a press conference and said he was going to do it. Is a cure worse than disease? Is being so dependent on government worse than, well, taking care of ourselves? Now, no one has stopped to, or if they stop to think of what the consequences are of what they've been doing, well, I don't think they've done a very good job of it. For example, there are several sheriffs in Illinois, the areas around Chicago, that said they will not send their deputies to Chicago to deal with their staffing shortages. Now, there are several reasons why Chicago police have staffing shortages, but it's interesting to listen to the or to read the statement from the Illinois Law Enforcement Alarm System when they said that it doesn't feel like the onus is on us to go in an emergency situation that was created by poor government and a lack of support the officers receive. In other words, no one stopped to think of what are the consequences. And I said, there are many. Chicago has been murder capital most years for many, many years. They have, let's just say they've mismanaged it, and now they're going to go begging to their neighbors to get help. And what was the latest thing? Mayor Lightfoot said that the officers who will not submit to their vaccine mandate will be terminated. So here you have a mayor in Chicago, among other things, saying, listen, you have to take the jab. You have to become a guinea pig. You have to be an experimental subject, or you're going to lose your life. You're going to lose your job, I should say. And when people start saying, Mayor Lightfoot, no, you come fire us. We're not going to do that. And now they're in trouble. In fact, I guess the deadline was October 15th, at which point officials told local media that only 64% of Chicago police had reported their vaccination status. So now they're saying, okay, surrounding neighbors, we are pissing all over our police. Now neighboring towns and suburbs, you send us help. And they're saying, no, you have so badly mismanaged this, we are not going to pay for your mismanagement. Now, it's not simply, it's interesting because this is happening so many places. You see, there's actually a report that a number of trucking companies are going to end their federal contracts because of the vaccine mandate, at least according to the American Trucking Association. See, okay, Biden says if you are a federal contractor, by the way, federal government has no authority to demand a federal contractor suddenly implement a vaccine mandate. That wasn't part of the contract. They can't simply change the terms of the contract. Now, when that contract expires and they go to renew it, they can add that as a requirement, but not beforehand. This is just another example. This is rule by fiat. This is not law. This is not law and order. This is diktat. Well, company's saying, listen, that's the way you're going to be. We won't do business with you. Now, I'm sure this is going to have a financial impact on many of those companies, but what's their alternative? Have the impact of not having drivers? Because they look at their drivers and say, no, we are not getting the vaccine. This is what happens. This is the cure being worse than disease. Because let's face it, again, COVID-19, the vast majority of the American population has a 98%+ chance of surviving COVID. 98% plus. And for that, we have crippled our economy. We have destroyed the education of our children. And now we are being told that we have to give up our right to our bodies as a cure for a disease that really only impacts the elderly and the infirm. It doesn't impact children. Very small percentage of children, very small percentage of young people, extremely small, very small percentage of the vast majority of the population. Unless you are old or infirm, COVID-19 is not that dangerous. It's unpleasant, but it's not that dangerous. And if you get basic medical treatment, not the nonsense that CDC's been coming up with, what actual doctors in the field with people have done. I talked earlier with a Dr. LaTulip who was saying, listen, even before we knew it was called COVID-19, all we did was treat it like we would any other influenza-like disease, and all of his patients were fine. None of his patients died. None of his patients went to the hospital. We see more and more reports how about basic treatments are take care of the vast majority of COVID-19 illnesses. But no, we have to have an emergency. And now the cure, these vaccine mandates, have become more dangerous, more damaging, worse than the disease. Now, there is a lawsuit currently in Pennsylvania that argues that the vaccine mandates violate the Constitution. Now, it's an interesting and kind of an odd, in my point of view, argument. Basically, if I understand, if the article is correct, the lawsuit argues that the act of receiving or declining a vaccine has become a political act. So when an employer compels the employee to get vaccinated, they're forcing the employees to engage in a form of political speech, which is a violation of the First Amendment. Now, that's just plain weird and twisted logic. This is this idea from lawyers that everything has to be a First Amendment issue. This is not political speech. It is a violation of the Constitution, absolutely. But the lawsuit, which has been been brought by Pennsylvania Informed Consent Advocates, actually names the University of Pennsylvania Health System, along with the U.S. Secretary of Labor, Scott Ketchum, and the Secretary of Health and Human Services, Xavier Becerra. But how they're turning this into speech is really kind of, I don't know, it's weird. It's trying to fit, it's looking at saying, we got to find a First Amendment issue. Somehow we got to twist this into a First Amendment issue when it is clearly a Fifth Amendment issue. It is the deprivation of liberty and property without due process of law. But then again, since lawyers don't actually study the Constitution in law school anymore, I'm not surprised. But again, now we have a whole lawsuit in Pennsylvania trying to deal with a vaccine mandate, which is clearly a violation of the Constitution. Violates the Fifth Amendment, violates the Tenth Amendment, violates the Supremacy Clause. These mandates are not the supreme law of the land because they are not laws of the United States made pursuant to the Constitution. Right. But here we have, oh no, our cure is to somehow fit this into a First Amendment argument. I can't wait to see if this is laughed out of court because it's, get a shot. Is that speech? No, it's a medical decision. And then looking what's happening in Los Angeles. Now, when the Los Angeles County and actually the state of California illegally attempted to shut down businesses, and I'm using those words purposely. One, it was illegal. It was a deprivation of property without due process of law. They had no proof that these orders that the restaurants only permit takeout orders. They had no proof that would do anything to save society that was necessary for society. Therefore, it was a deprivation of rights under color of law. What they did was actually a federal crime. Well, guess what? Several of the restaurants said, listen, we can't survive that way. And they looked at it, and to be honest, they shouldn't have to try to survive that way. This order should have been considered null and void because it was not made pursuant to the Constitution of the state of California. They were violations of the Constitution of the United States. And according to both Alexander Hamilton and the Supreme Court, those acts are void. They're not valid. But of course, bullies don't like to be told that. So the county, Los Angeles County, decided to sue two of these restaurant owners. And one of them, Crony Sports Grill, owned by a David Folds, well, they've agreed to a $10,000 settlement for those fines. Now, here's my question. As a free person, do you need government permission to do business? It's a very important question. See, do you need a government permission to do business? When I started selling stuff in Tennessee, Tennessee requires, Tennessee has a sales tax. So I'm trying to be a good citizen. I say, well, what do I need to do in order to deal with collect and remit sales tax? They said, well, you have to get a business license. I said, oh, really? So you're telling me I need government permission to do business? Now, mostly what it was is a business tax. It's, you know, they call it a license. It's a tax. So I paid my tax. But I've also made a very simple decision. If the state of Tennessee says believes it has the authority to tell me not to do business, I don't care. Now, will I be sued? Will I be incurred fines someday? Possibly. But if the state of Tennessee is going to ignore my rights, if I'm going to find them just those actions just as void. But back to LA. So when this Mr. Folds, when the owner of these businesses that were sued, what did the people of Los Angeles do to defend them? You see, they were told that the cure to this disease was for everybody to shut down. They said, we are going to do this regardless of the law. The LA County said, we're going to implement this, even though it violates the Constitution, it violates the rule of law. It's an atrocity of justice. But yet, these businesses have been sued, and one of them has decided it was better to settle than to stand and fight. Now, some will say, well, see, yeah, you know, you can't fight City Hall. You can't stand up against the man. Sure you can. It takes intestinal fortitude, and it takes support. You see, the LA Public Health Department, who are the ones issuing the citations, again, does the LA County, does any government have the authority to tell you whether or not you can do business or what business you can do? Now, I'm not familiar with the Constitution of California and what powers the people of California delegated to the governments in California to actually regulate restaurants and public health. I'm not familiar with that. Maybe there's something in there that says, yes, we can oversee you. But when the public health department denies you your property without proof that it is necessary, well, that's tyranny. At least according to Noah Webster, who in his 1828 dictionary said, paraphrasing, that a law that is not necessary for the safety and efficacy of society is tyranny. So here we have the cure, putting businesses out of business, putting people out of business, making the economy worse, having to fire people. But we have these people that are negotiating a settlement. Why? Could it be because the people of Los Angeles won't stand up and defend them, won't stand with them as they are fighting against these illegal mandates? See, the disease is not COVID-19. The disease is in the mind and this idea of servitude. And the cure of simply going along to get along means you lose more and more of your rights. You are less and less a free citizen. You are more a subject and slave to government. Now think of all these cures that we were told. We were told we have to have them. It's a necessity, which is the excuse for every infringement on human freedom. It's according to William Pitt the Younger. So when we look at these vaccine mandates, we compare them to the other mandates. We look at the vaccine mandates, and what do we find? Well, back in October, the CDC reported almost 32,000 vaccine failure cases that had resulted in hospitalization. And 23% of those were fatalities. Now, these are what they refer to as spontaneously reported, meaning they're reported through their vaccine adverse effects reporting system, or VAERS. In the United Kingdom, they, according to their COVID vaccine surveillance report, they're following Israel. They've become one of the most, they're like the second most heavily vaccinated country in the world. and they have far more vaccinated than unvaccinated individuals in the hospital or are ill with COVID-19. The vaccines do not prevent the spread of COVID. They can't. The data is in. The vaccines are not stopping the spread of SARS-CoV-2. They're not preventing hospitalizations. They are not preventing death. Now, there may be some other effects as far as, you know, what percentage of people are hospitalized, but we're being told we have to vaccinate to stop the spread to save others. But it doesn't work. The cure, the vaccine mandate, which is supposedly the cure for COVID-19, doesn't work. And it exposes you to dangers. We have no idea of what they must be. Yet we're being told we have to redouble, we have to work harder and harder. We have to bully, intimidate, coerce people into getting the vaccine that doesn't work. I've seen it in my own family. I've seen it in friends and neighbors. And what are we doing? A paper was done looking at information from Veterans Affairs. And according to the paper, 45% of those hospitalized for COVID-19, their oxygen saturation was never below 94%. They were not in desperate need. Yet they were rushed to the hospital in a panic with something that simple home medical care could have done with. Okay, maybe in some cases, a home oxygen concentrator. They were sent to the hospital when they didn't need, they went to the hospital. They weren't sent, they went, they were so scared, they ran to the hospital, even though they weren't in that bad a shape. They could have easily been taken care of home with decent medical care. So once again, we see the cure that we are told about is actually causing more dangers. If 45% of the VA's hospitalizations didn't require hospitalization, what does that put to the hospitalization numbers for the rest of us? I mean, that was just the Veterans Affairs. How many of these COVID hospitalizations are hospitalizations out of panic, not out of medical need? Because we've scared people to death. We've allowed ourselves to be scared into doing foolish things because we never bothered to check to see if what we're being told is true. We just sat back like good little serfs, like good little subjects, and did what we were told. Now, there is something we can do, and I've already hinted to it. We need to learn for ourselves. See, if we want to be free, we must learn to live free. You know, when they signed the Declaration of Independence, the signers pledged to each other their lives, their fortunes, and their sacred honor. And we talk about pledging our lives, we think about dying for a cause. And there are causes worth dying for. But is liberty and freedom and independence from an overbearing government something worth living for? See, if I pledge my life to liberty, I don't simply mean that I will die for the cause. I mean I will live for the cause. I will live as a free citizen. If it means it costs me more to do things, then I will pay that cost. That's pledging my fortune. If it means it inconveniences me, it means I have to drive farther to get what I need. If it means I have to drive rather than fly. If it means I won't do business with certain people, if it means doctors won't see me, which we're dealing with right now, I'll do that. It's amazing what happens when you live as a free citizen. So I see people in fear. You know, I see people walking around in masks, and my first thought is, are they just simply afraid? Or do they have a legitimate reason to wear a mask? There are legitimate reasons to wear masks. I'm not saying they aren't there. But we've turned ourselves so inside out that my first assumption is, no, they're living in fear. When I see people, when I have people we know who The woman is pregnant, and they went to get the vaccine because the doctor warned them, hey, if you don't have the vaccine and there's a problem with the birth, well, you may be delayed in treatment because of a lack of vaccine. Now, I don't know about you. I find that disgusting. I find that a violation of the Hippocratic Oath. You're telling me that if somebody shows up to the hospital in need, their treatment will be delayed because they didn't submit to an experimental treatment? A treatment that's been shown not to do what we've been told it will do, stop the spread? Expose ourselves to a new medical technology in the mRNA products? I can't call them vaccines because by the legal definition, they're not. They don't stop the spread of the disease. They don't prevent you from getting the disease. They give you the disease of servitude. So the question is, people, do you want to live as free citizens or do you want to live as subjects? It's easy to look at what's going on and say it's just easier to comply. It's easier to do what you're told. It's easier to just not put up the fight. All it will cost you is all of your freedom and all of your liberty. Oh, not today. But if they can tell you that you can't live as a free citizen without a COVID shot, what about a flu shot? What about other medication? What about how you live your life? What happens when you can't get a job until you've done absolutely everything the government tells you is best for you? Are you free then? No. We will lose everything we hold dear if we bow to these tyrants, because the cure they are offering is far worse than the disease. Most of us, if we do get COVID, we'll be sick for a few days and then we'll recover. If we get some basic medical treatment, some of us may have to go to the hospital. And there are some who might die. But when the CDC says that 94% of the COVID deaths are people who died with COVID, not of COVID, I have to wonder how large that number is. But the decision is ours. It's not government's, it's not your neighbor's, it's yours. Will you live as a free citizen or will you bow as a subject? Now, all of my shows go to Top Podcast a day or two after the broadcast is on the radio. Find them on Spotify, Stitcher, Pandora, iHeart Podcast, basically anywhere you listen to podcasts. And do me a favor, go to Apple Podcasts for me, give me a subscription and a rating so that other people can find us and secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity.
Stay out of jail, love the neighbors, and have a few good friends.